everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. Big news day following the first congressional address by Joe Biden. So that's two things that are spicing up my life. That last night and this fly that won't leave me alone. That's the best thing you want right as you go live. But the next best thing on the show, other than this fly, my co-host Viviana Vigil returns. Viviana, how's it going?
John, thanks for having me. I am doing well. I'm a little tired from last night and all the adventures we had. Well, the world.
Yeah, it was something. And so I at least talked about it a lot, but I definitely want to get your opinions in a little bit. And then we are going to do the difficult, but I think necessary task of understanding and hopefully pushing back a bit against some of the responses to a few of Biden's proposals. So we're going to give you reactions and try to get an idea for how the right wing is attempting to spin and respond to what, spoiler alert, was a pretty well received speech. So we'll have those numbers for you. We'll have those responses for you. We will be able to make fun of Ted Cruz a little bit for you. That's always fun. And then we've got more. Joe Manchin, massive obstacle to pretty much everything. We're going to talk about one of his most recent arguments for why nothing should be done, why the government should just cease to function, basically. And then finally, we're going to be closing out this episode of the Damage Report with, meanwhile, in news from around the world on a number of different important topics. So very excited, Viviana, to have you. It's been a little bit since we spoke. How have you been holding it, hanging in there?
I've been good. Work is picking up. You know, I've been vaccinated for some time, so I've gone to restaurants. I've been visiting family. It's been really great, and I've been trying to encourage as many people as possible to get vaccinated, because I just feel like we've been trying to prevent deaths and illness for over a year now. And I just feel like if you get sick and die now, it's just like so tragic. You know what I mean? Even more so than before, because you could just protect yourself, you know?
Yeah.
And help all of us get through it.
Totally at this late date. But I don't know, I'm kind of shifting my opinion. I was pretty pro-vax, but then I listened to this podcast and the guy seemed really sure of himself. So anyway, but little bit of positive vax news. On the pre-show, people were talking about some of the sites. I think one was in Illinois that's now available to everyone. I also want to let you know, as this fly continues to buzz around, there's literally a massive room. Go over there, seriously.
We can't
see it. I'm in a huge room. Anyway, so I just seem insane. That's great.
Yeah.
Even if you could see, I'd seem insane. I also wanted to let you know, according to the New Jersey Department of Health, all six New Jersey mega sites are offering walk-in vaccinations. You don't need an appointment. You don't need to be a resident of a specific county to get vaccinated. I don't know for sure about whether you can do it from out of state. I'm not sure. But if you live in New Jersey, there is nothing stopping you from getting vaccinated other than that podcast and a bit of a drive, maybe, potentially. But there's six. New Jersey, not the biggest state. So consider getting it. And if you do get vaccinated today, feel free to let me know in the chat. That said, we're going to jump into this big hour of news. And as we do so, I would love it if you could hit the like button and share the stream. And if you want to send us messages, tweets, comments, concerns, super chats, anything like that, we'll respond as we go. With that said, Viviana, are you ready to do this?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Last night was President Biden's first address to Congress. And I said pretty much right after it ended that it wasn't necessarily designed for me. He doesn't go nearly far enough for me on a number of these topics, and tons of topics, including student loan debt cancellation, weren't even broached that I would have had be a big focus. That said, I could tell that while most Americans probably weren't going to watch it, those who did, I expected, would probably like it. He seemed to be talking about crises that people care about. There wasn't anything insane going on. And it turns out that according to initial polls, it looks like that was largely true. New CNN poll shows about half of Americans who watched his address to Congress had a very positive reaction to the speech. That's very positive. 71% said they walked away feeling more optimistic about the country's direction. They also said that his policy proposals would move the country in the right direction. That was 73% of them, rather than the wrong direction, 27%. Which is, I mean, that's a smaller percentage than even just like Trump's core, let alone other Republicans who might be disinclined to like Joe Biden. We got a little bit more on this, and we'll certainly get to the reactions. But Viviana, what did you think of the speech?
I mean, I'm right there with you, John. I think that there was a lot more that he could have went into. That being said, I'm excited that we have a president who at least is going through the proper motions, and we don't have a toddler up there that is unable to even read a teleprompter. You know, Biden was reading the prompter for the most part, but he was really warm. He was really trying to connect with, you know, the audience. It was a sparse crowd there in person, but I felt like he really was trying to rally the country together. And it's funny to me, a lot of the reactions, especially from, you know, the right mainstream media, you know, saying, where's the bipartisanship? Well, where was it in your, like, why all of a sudden is that important to you, you know? But it's also funny to me to see outlets like CNN really calling Biden a progressive and a left candidate, which is like the furthest thing from the truth. I mean, there's so many moderates in the Democratic Party right now that it's a little bit scary. And I do like that he is making some steps, progressive steps in regards to community college. And, you know, there's that child care tax credit that's gonna be huge for so many families. So, you know, I like that he said that this crisis can give us a little bit of an opportunity. And that's smart. Yeah. That's, you know, if you wanna talk about a businessman, Donald Trump, business people look for opportunity in crisis. And I think that, you know, Biden is really, it was a great angle to take, because we do have a lot of opportunity to kind of get ahead of the game. The infrastructure has been crumbling since Obama went into office. I mean, they've been talking about building the infrastructure. So overall, I give him a thumbs up, but it's kind of like what we were used to before. Anything's an improvement.
Yeah, I try to watch it both as myself and as what if I were a regular person, occasionally tuning into the news, dealing with my life's problems, what would I think? And I think that person would be more satisfied with what they saw. Did you happen to catch Representative Bowman's speech?
I did watch some of it just in after. Just
any thoughts about that?
I just feel like we have so much discourse amongst everybody that, you know, it's hard to stay positive with that kind of stuff going on.
Oh, are you thinking of Tim Scott, the Republican response?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, well,
there were multiple responses right off the bat.
Yeah.
Well, what did you think about Tim Scott's?
I mean, just that I really, you know, I'm glad that he doesn't feel that there's racism in. I'm glad. I mean, that's great news for him. But I've said this before on the show, John, I'll say it again. You don't have to be white to be a white supremacist. And I think it's such a buzzword right now. And it's shocking to me that it's even being spoken by some of these major political leaders. But we do have to acknowledge that when we say that this country is a racist country, that doesn't mean that everybody's a KKK member. It means that we were founded on principles that really relied on racism to, you know, to create growth and expansion. And so if we don't acknowledge that moving forward, and that's really what all of this hullabaloo about critical race theory discovers, is like, we gotta look at some of those things so we can get past it, you know? Totally. And so that's what I mean about the divisiveness. I feel like everybody is really trying to distance themselves from anything they think is extreme. And everybody's saying the working man, and even Biden talking about how important unions are when Amazon just won that deal and there's no union with Amazon. Yeah. Gig work is bigger than ever. Nobody's being compensated the way they should. He talked about minimum wage, that was great. But you know, you have people like Senator Scott, and I'm sorry, I mixed him with Bowman, but you have people like that coming forward and really kind of devaluing other people's experiences. You know, you cannot just say, well, I haven't experienced it, so it must not exist. Well, I haven't experienced a lot of things, and that doesn't mean they don't happen. So it's a real rough time right now, and I'm very afraid, because I think we know that 2024 is gonna be a really, really monumental election, and the way we're going, it's critical that we get things right.
Yeah, not at this point feeling super optimistic about what is likely to happen in the next presidential election, but appreciate your response. Now, let's turn to, we're gonna do this fairly rapid fire, ideally, because I wanna get to a lot of these, but what is the response to what Biden had to say? The rhetoric, the the substance. The Republicans obviously are not going to just stand up and applaud. They didn't applaud cutting, you know, child poverty in half. They're not going to applaud most of his big plans, certainly. They have to respond with something. And the initial attempts from a lot of their politicians, I would describe as a bit fumbling. So for instance, Senator Marsha Blackburn tweeted in response to an article, or in response to his call for universal daycare, which would be massive for so many families, the amount of money that you spend. So huge idea. She doesn't want people to get excited about that. So she tweeted, you know who else likes universal daycare? And it's a 1974 article about the Soviet Union. Okay.
John, I loved your tweet response to that. Do you remember what you tweeted?
Yeah, it was the Soviets ate food, therefore I shall not. Yeah, the Soviets liked lots of things. They liked hugs and ice cream. It's okay to like those things. And I love the idea that how many constituents does she have? How many parents? How many parents that are paying $1,000
a month? Who's gonna be against this, John?
Who's gonna read her tweet and be like, good point. I would love to not spend $1,000 a month on this, but that's true. Khrushchev was in favor of it, so I don't wanna be.
Yeah.
It's,
you know, but there is something to look at when you see what other countries have done in regards to childcare, and there were failures. There were, you know, centers that weren't strong enough, they weren't skilled enough. So we can learn from that. Just because something wasn't necessarily 100% successful in the past, it doesn't mean we can't adapt. We don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's a perfect analogy.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if the Soviets did it.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But that was what Bowman was talking about too, to go back now that I didn't mix it up. You know, we have to push forward for these kinds of things. You know, and so it's exciting to hear it being discussed. Will it be implemented? Probably not, because when it comes down to pay that bill, everybody seems to think it's too expensive. But you got to invest in the kids. If we want to solve homelessness, if we want to solve all these things, we have to start at the beginning. You can't just wait until it's in flames.
Yeah, very worried about what's going to end up being left in that infrastructure bill, assuming anything passes. But we will continue to talk about that. I do want to broaden it a bit though. So Marsha Blackburn, not in favor of the universal daycare, which, yeah, good luck with that rhetorical battle. But then, okay, what about the rest of it? Because there's a lot that he wants to do in this new plan that would in a number of different ways help people out. People who are struggling, working multiple jobs, they need help on things like healthcare and stuff like that. It doesn't go as far as I would want, but it's a lot more than we have now. So what is her initial attempt to convince the American people to turn against all of this new relief coming? Here's what she's got.
What this would do is incentivize women to rely on the federal government to organize their lives. It takes away from them the ability to organize their family life as they would like to organize it.
Yeah, none of that is true. So the idea
is so offensive. It's so offensive.
Like, okay, so now
as a woman, a childless woman, I'm still offended.
So let's say in theory you were gonna have some kids, and then throughout your life you have two potential worlds. You have the current world where you have to cover all the childcare. It potentially affects your career in a negative fashion. When they want to go to college, they're gonna go massively in debt for it. So in this other world, we help to defray those costs. Sorry, Viviana, you've lost the ability to organize your life. She said, by the way, later in the video, it would force you to rely on the federal government. 2 years of college, whether you like it or not, year three pre-K mandated, takes away choices from the American people. Like, literally none of that is true. It doesn't mandate any of that. It makes it available if you want it. She literally wants to take away the option.
She's literally taking away choices. And guess what, Marsha? Women are working anyway. It's already affecting them. Very few families have the luxury to have one stay-at-home parent. Very few families, and they're relying on neighbors and relatives and all kinds of friends just to get food on the table, you know, and for her to sit there and act like it's gonna be some crutch, like women are just gonna leave their families. And also, why are we talking just about women, Marsha? There are men who are parents too. People need childcare because we have not raised the minimum wage. Hello? And not just the minimum wages, all wages haven't raised. Everything's going up, cost of living increasing, jumping, you know, a mile a minute. No one's getting raises over here. I've made the least amount I've made in 20 years in some cases. So for her to say that we're taking away choices by giving choices, I really don't even understand what she's saying. Mandatory school, who said that? Who said you have to go to college? Nobody. Nobody said that. So
but the idea, it does play into a lot of people who watch Fox News have been convinced for decades that higher education is the worst thing, and they associate it just with liberal propaganda to your kids, as at the state level they try to stop certain things from being taught and everything. But anyway, they wanted you to believe, oh, they're gonna make your kids get turned into libs against you. Yeah. And this is so far the best counter argument they have. And I get it. And the American people have very little expectation for their government. And but I don't know, like there's a lot of people who are suffering when potential relief is dangled in front of them, the idea that they're just going to say, no, screw that, I don't want it because it's Stalin. Okay, if that's the best you've got, then let's see.
It's a lot of misinformation. You know, I saw, it's a lot of radio stations. There's a local one here in LA talking about the child tax credit that they're calling it another stimulus check, which in some ways it is, but it's this child tax credit coming to families. And so people without knowing anything about what's going on, oh, no one's gonna wanna work anymore. I mean, this is just comment after comment after comment. And so this is the misinformation that's coming out, that people are just gonna be sedentary and are not gonna work. I even saw a story that a bunch of asparagus went bad because they didn't have anybody to come in and work in the fields. Does that have to do with people getting unemployment, or does that have to do with the crisis at the border? Because we used to have a pretty fluid workforce coming through and taking advantage of, you know, being migrant workers. And so there's a lot of variables, but it just seems like the GOP, I'm gonna change their name to Gaslight Obsessed Party, because they just wanna trick you all the time. I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, it comes in some other forms too. So let's turn now to the media. One of the areas of Joe Biden's speech that I actually liked was he gave a fairly good, if not incredibly strong, refutation of the idea of trickle down economics and the idea that we can just keep showering the rich with money and somehow that's gonna benefit us. Sure, it didn't work under Reagan or George W. Bush or Trump, but surely the next time it will work. Well, okay, we need to fight back against that. And so he's starting to. Now that said, the right isn't going to like that because they want more of these tax cuts, and their media. People like the hosts of Fox and Friends would stand to gain a lot of money from future tax cuts. So they're gonna turn against those. So we got a couple of clips for you. The first is an attempt to pretend that being against all of this aid going to the working class is actually a Fox defense of the working class. Here is Ainsley Earhart.
I was just saying, I thought it was very polarizing last night, because they're saying, we'll take care of you. We're gonna pay all of your bills. You can't do it on your own. But you hear everyone in the diner this morning saying, we want to work. We want people to come back to work because we like feeling proud of ourselves. We like putting our head on our pillow at the end of the night and at the end of the day, and knowing that I worked hard for that pillow, for that food that was on.
Was that a MyPillow reference?
It was. They actually talked more about the MyPillow afterward. I don't know. Are they sponsored by it? I don't know. So, okay. Well, look, let's throw it out to the country and just understand there's 3 millionaires that are telling you, no, don't take any of this help from the government during this horrible economic crisis, because then you won't have your pride. You won't be a real man.
Maybe it'll work. I make $450,000 a year and I don't want this to hurt me. That's just what they should say. You know, everybody's trying to act like they're really trying to help the working class on both sides. Both parties are both saying working people. I don't understand how Fox News can sit there and with a straight face act like taxing the rich, a small little chunk, they won't even know, I promise, is gonna really hurt the working man. How? This country was built because we put money into the working class. We provided structure and infrastructure for these jobs. I mean, we've seen those things work where we have seen trickle down fail every single time. And we've seen investing in our population work every single time. So it's really just at the end of the day, who is it helping? And like you said, mainstream media, most people are very wealthy. Of course, the owners are very wealthy and they want to keep it that way. I mean, they have monopolies as it is. They don't want the regulation. They don't want to be taxed. I mean, even as an individual, John, the way it is now for me to make money in this country, and I don't make anywhere near these Fox News, you know, hosts, but I have to have a corporation and work under a corporation name. Otherwise, I'll be taxed too heavily as an individual. And I have to have enough money to do that and to pay my taxes as an individual. So I have to pay two sets of taxes now just so that I don't have nothing at the end of my paycheck. You know, I mean, this is what is going down now for the American people. And it's starting to become a more widespread thing. We saw that with unemployment actually offering money to people who are self-employed for the first time. And I'm not sure if that's nationwide, but here in California, they offered that. So we can see that the working class is continuing to really struggle and be on their own and work for everything for that pillow. And it's probably not a MyPillow because we don't want to invest in those. I heard they're crappy on top of it, but we do work for everything on our own. And we are paying, I mean, I owe this is hilarious. I owe the IRS $600. Because I told him I didn't get my $600 stimulus. So I was like, I didn't get it, so I'm not gonna. So I have to somehow get my stimulus just so I could give it back to the IRS. Mm-hmm. That's where we're at right now. That's what individuals are dealing with.
It's annoying, yeah. Well, look, to a couple different aspects of what you said. Part of the new plan does involve standardizing and supporting unemployment programs. John Oliver, by the way, had a great show about unemployment a few weeks back. Everyone should watch that. And then, and also $80 billion over the next decade for more funding for the IRS, which would be very helpful. You know what, really fast, quick aside, I'm having an issue with the IRS as well. So I had a couple of years ago some taxes I apparently didn't pay, had no idea about it, and they never let me know. So years go by, I paid taxes multiple times since then, they never brought it up. Anyway, years go by, they let me know about it finally, and what do you know? There's some penalties and there's some interest because I hadn't paid because I didn't know about it. So I was lucky that I was one of the people that was in the know enough to know there's a program that can get rid of some of those penalties if you've never had penalties before. So I did that. That leaves me with remaining taxes I have to pay, less, but still something. So then I go on the website to pay that off. And they have a thing that lets you pay it, but the thing that lets you pay it doesn't say what you owe. It doesn't seem to know. They have a different tool that knows what you have to pay. So I went to that, and because I had just gone through this program, and so the number has changed, it doesn't know what I owe either. So I would have to pay some random amount. So fine, I'm like, okay, I gotta call up. So I call them, and normally that involves getting in a line. And I've been on the line with them for literally hours waiting. It was so busy, they don't even put you in the line. It literally just kicks you off. Yeah. So I have no idea what I'm supposed to do. And as time goes on, I'm probably generating more penalties and interest. So great system. Anyway, long story short, fund the IRS.
It's the same way for the Small Business Administration. I have a SBA loan. And when you go, they don't tell you how much your payment is. You just have to randomly write a check to an address and you have to like.
And is it gonna go to the right thing? Like, no, I wanna pay that bill, you psychos. Anyway, whatever. Okay, so I have had some issues with taxes. Fox and Friends is gonna have some issues with their perception of Biden's tax plan, because Biden is saying no more trickle down economics.
And I think he was really clear about it. I thought he was very clear. I thought it made a lot of sense. Sure. And it's a complicated thing to understand. So I thought he did a great job there, because people need to understand when we talk about tax the rich, it's not like we're just gonna take half of what you make, rich people. It's, you know, that he really broke it down. And I feel like you said, your average Joe watching, you know, the speech is gonna be like, maybe look into it more, maybe understand it a little bit more. But you know, when we talk about working on infrastructure, I think we need to work on the infrastructure like of technology as well, because it's not connecting. It's really a mess.
Yeah. Well, I wanna go to one more quick reaction. So we're gonna jump to the last video in the A block and then move on to a little bit of fun with Ted Cruz. But so I was wondering, maybe it's weird of me to wonder, I don't know if you were, but as Biden was speaking, you know, I wonder what Trump is thinking about this, because he's not on Twitter. Normally he would have been live tweeting it. He'll probably put out one of his tweets as presidential statements, but we don't even have to wait for that, because actually he was brought onto Fox News this morning and he did have something to say. It was like drilling very specifically into one issue that he had. So here is a little bit of what Trump thought about the first Biden address.
Times larger than that. And obviously they're very ungracious people. I did the vaccine. They like to take the vaccine, but even the fake news isn't giving them credit for that. We did the vaccine, saved you know, just tens of millions of lives throughout the world by coming up with a vaccine. If I weren't president, the vaccine, you wouldn't have a vaccine for 5 years. 3 to 5 years would be the minimum. I got it done in less than 9 months, and that's only because of me. If I wasn't president, you wouldn't have a vaccine. And then I went out and spent billions of dollars to buy the vaccine before approval. So people are getting shots long before they would have. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been getting your shots till October or November. Nobody would have had a shot right now. So and people are giving us credit, even, you know, the fakers. We got a lot of fake news people, but we're getting credit for that.
Nobody gives me credit, except that everyone knows I did it, and they're even giving me credit. Even the fakers say you did it. Why don't they give me credit as they're giving me credit?
Is this what you thought he'd be thinking of?
No, this was so focused on the vaccine thing, and it's the same lies. I don't want to waste a lot of time on that, because the idea that it was only me, I was in the lab night after night with beakers and reagents, tinkle, 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 mixing it up, thus you have shots, like you had anything to do with it. Fine, but that's stupid. The idea that, like, they're not gracious people. That yeah. Biden was gonna do, first of all, Biden was like so trying to reach out with Republicans. He literally said he applauded the Republicans on some BS
too
plan
much.
That they're not working on.
Yeah.
But the idea that, like, oh yeah, because I remember Trump's first address, Barack Obama, hell of a guy, great economy, thanks for that, Barack. No, you didn't do that. They're not gonna do it for you.
I think this is a good time when he just said the word gracious. It reminded me that he didn't go to the inauguration.
He didn't. They're ungracious. He didn't even go. You tried to steal the election. That's not gracious.
But you didn't even go. I mean, it's like, how can you even get on a high horse about being gracious? You know, we have given him credit. You know, you have the little bit of credit. You tried to kill us all, and then you were forced to do some good things, and it worked out. So, you know, 500,000 people died. I don't know if you want to take those deaths on your hands. You like to focus on the positive that more people could have died but didn't. So, you know, he did slash a lot of red tape, bureaucracy wise. I don't think it was him directly, and I'm pretty sure it would have happened if Biden was in office or Hillary Clinton was in office
as well. It's not like Jeb Bush would be like, oh my God, we're losing 200,000 a month, but I don't want to override the CDC.
No, why does Jeb Bush sound like the pimple faced teen on The Simpsons?
I don't know. I don't really remember what he sounds like, but I know he's pathetic anyway. Please, vaccine. I don't know, but anybody would have done it. Anybody would have funded it.
Trump talked about that.
But
he doesn't know about anything else. He hasn't been following any other issues or things that are going on with Biden's plan. He hasn't read it. He doesn't care. All he knows is that he can say this rhetoric about the vaccine, and it used to get people riled up, and now who cares? Also, why doesn't he ever do video like Zoom interviews? It's always on the phone, like it's 1987. Like,
that is interesting.
Right?
Oh, I think the makeup process is probably extensive. I don't know if did he bring his makeup person down to Mar-a-Lago? I don't know.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
People tuned into the president's address expecting Sleepy Joe, and instead they got Ted Snooze. Take a look at this.
We can actually, if you actually want to solve a problem, I've sent a bill to take a close look at it. We have to also have to get at the root problem of why people are fleeing, particularly to our southern border from Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador.
Okay, so I don't know if it's funnier, the idea that they got the camera on him just as he was about to go to sleep, or if he was like on the verge of sleep for so long that no matter when you went to him, you were gonna find it. But it is great that it was literally while talking about people fleeing near the border. So very timely for him.
Usually that would get him excited because that's what he likes to do. He was like, ooh, vacation? No.
I think he pictures laying on the beach, nice drink with an umbrella in it.
I mean, I think Cruz probably sleeps through most of the stuff that goes on in there because he doesn't really seem to be much knowledge on how to make. I really don't get him. But we know that Joe is a Sleepy Joe. That was a perfect nickname for Sleepy Joe. I loved it. You know, we're not Trump fans, but he gives good nicknames. I'll be honest. We have a boring president again, and it's a good thing. So if you doze off a little bit, it's okay. Kind of on you if you're a senator. No, it's okay if you're at home, not when you're a senator.
Well, this is the most work he's done. That sleep was the most work. Anyway, Tesla Ranger says he's jet lagged. That's funny. I personally think, like, you know that warm sleepiness, like when you're too warm. You need to understand, can we put up the video of him? He has an entire live possum stuffed into that mask. That is gonna warm you up. So let's be understanding. Anyway, there were some great responses online that I want to get to. Someone who I am probably too much a fan of, Padmalakshmi, tweeted, when you're mentally on a beach in Cancun. Totally. The Daily Show. So Trevor Noah's been like feuding with Ted Cruz a little bit.
I love it.
He had a few. He said, looks like Ted's eyes are hooked up to his state's power grid. That's sad great. And unfortunate, but great. He also tweeted this gross. With an image of Ted fantasizing about that porn video he tweeted out that time.
Oh my god.
That's pretty good. And then my favorite one, because it is so true of my own personal experience, from Tommy Vitor, says, when you were warned to take half, but you wanted the full edible. Yeah.
It hasn't kicked in yet.
Like, it's been an hour. No, I can have the rest. Anyway.
Yeah, right.
Now, the thing is, Ted Cruz is going to try to make himself look cool out of this. Like, I don't know. So he tweeted hashtag boring but radical. Again, no, I know that you guys are gonna like try to have your Sleepy Joe and eat it too, but like, yeah, it's so radical. He's destroying everything. I'm getting snoozies. So do you not care that he's destroying everything?
Right. If he's so radical and so progressive and they're ruining the, why are you asleep? You seem to be lulled by the calmness and the security that he's providing for you, the blanket of freedom that you're under.
Exactly. And then the Washington Post tweeted out, Ted Cruz was roasted for appearing to nod off as Biden spoke. He blamed the president, boring but radical, to which Ted Cruz quote retweeted, true that. And
wow. Cruz is just like the nerdiest guy. He's the nerdiest frat boy that they don't even like in the frat. And his like dad put a lot of money and he was in the frat. And so they let him in, but nobody liked him. He didn't invite him to parties and stuff.
Yeah.
That's who Ted Cruz is.
Not a fan.
Like always hitting on chicks, all slimy and gross. Like he's the kind of guy that's like, hey, let me open the door for you and you're 50,000 feet away. And he's like making you run and jiggle on the way. He's that guy. That's Ted Cruz.
That is very specific. I'm sorry that you've had to go through that apparently, but anyway.
Every woman's gone through that.
Yeah, well, that's unfortunate. Okay, I think that's enough of Ted Cruz. So why don't we turn to a little bit of news that we narrowly missed yesterday. Sorry, a bit of a pulling it out of nowhere for the director. Rudy Giuliani was surprisingly back in the news this week because, and this was breaking news, He won, I think, 2 Razzies actually for his appearance in the Borat subsequent movie film. There's other news too, but that's the important part. It was a great role. He'll be remembered for the rest of time. I actually envy him that he got to be in that scene with the woman who's basically the star of that movie. She was so talented, but yeah, no, he's just the worst. Oh, and then also he got raided. So we're gonna give details, but I don't know. What did you think at the time? Were you expecting any developments in the whole Rudy Giuliani thing that they would actually?
I was kind of surprised. I honestly didn't think it was gonna go anywhere. And the fact that he actually has been raided, I mean, you know that it took a lot to get to that point. And they're taking everything. They may find something that we don't even know about yet, or at least we don't know about. Maybe they know about it. So I was shocked. I'm sure Giuliani's shocked. I'm sure Trump is a little nervous. Of course, he's going to distance himself. But you know, the truth is going to come out eventually. We're going to see it. I was surprised, and I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of it.
Yeah, I'm always curious, but I don't have high expectations for the investigations into Rudy Giuliani or into Donald Trump, just because you know they're cloaked in so much power and wealth and influence. Rudy Giuliani obviously much less so, but they're protected from so much that I don't really expect much. And the part of it with Rudy Giuliani is, like as you say, maybe they'll find something we don't even know about. That's entirely true. But ostensibly, this is about Ukraine and his weird lobbying over there and the promises he might have made and his involvement with Lev Parnas and all that stuff. The issue is what he did and what Trump did was awful. Totally justified for him to be impeached over that. But I just feel like the country has moved on so much. I mean, Trump ran for re-election and almost won after that. He's been impeached again since then. Right. He killed over 500,000 people. Like, I just feel like as important as it was and should be, it seems now low stakes in comparison to so much that happened since. That's sort of my fear.
I agree with you. Were you surprised that they even raided him?
Yeah, I didn't expect him to really be on their radar. I assumed that he was so bad at hiding what he was doing that I thought we'd already gotten everything out of him back during the initial story, back in the lead up to the first impeachment.
We probably already have. I mean, we know and we have a suspicion that he's guilty of these things with good reason. So, you know, they're going to find evidence. But like you said, I totally agree. When you have that much power and money behind you, you get to hide a lot of things. And it's really not going to have any sort of, even if they find him guilty and they, it's not going to do anything to anybody else. He's going to be a little alone on an island and he did it by himself just because he wanted to. It had no effect on anybody. It's going to be distance from Trump. It's going to be distance from the Republican Party. It's going to be distance from all of that. So,
yeah.
And somehow they'll blame Hunter Biden again. I don't know how.
Well, guarantee right now, go to Fox News. They're talking about Hunter Biden, definitely. But anyway, there's just one section of this I want to read. So his lawyer, Rudy Giuliani's lawyer, Robert Costello, says that the raids are legal thuggery. And he says that Rudy has cooperated with prosecutors and offered to answer questions not involving his privileged communications with Trump. Of course, knowing that that's what people want to know about. He was communicating with Ukraine and then passing information back with Trump and vice versa to have a scheme to effectively try to sink Joe Biden's presidential campaign. That's what the whole thing was about. So saying you'll answer questions, but not about Trump. That's really not cooperation at that point. Yeah. And that's really where it maybe potentially matters. Although again, Trump was impeached over it. I don't think he's going to go to jail over the Ukraine thing. But anyway, Trump was asked about this, Viviana. So here is what he had to say about the raid of his former, maybe current lawyer.
In Manhattan yesterday, what do you want to say about this? Your reaction to this DOJ executing a search warrant of Rudy Giuliani's apartment?
Well, it is incredible because you bring up John Kerry and the horrible thing that he did and was doing for a period of time. And then you take the greatest mayor in the history of New York, you take a great patriot. You know, Rudy Giuliani is a great patriot. He does these things, he just loves this country. And they raid his apartment. It's like so unfair and such a double, it's like a double standard like I don't think anybody's ever seen before. It's very, very unfair. Rudy is a patriot who loves this country.
literally everything we've never seen before. Everything
we have definitely seen a bigger double standard than that.
Sure.
For sure, with you directly, Mr. Trump.
Viviana, a legal advice to you, if you're ever gonna commit any crimes, please be a patriot first, because if you're a patriot, right, you're not allowed to be investigated for anything. It would be
unfair. I don't even know what that means. What does it mean to be a patriot? Because does that mean you wanna kill Mike Pence? Does that mean you wanna burn down the Capitol building? What does it mean?
It seems to be tied in with certain forms of patriotism, that's for sure. Yeah, it's so unfair. It's not, it's a raid, like it's, they got a search warrant for it, like a judge.
I wonder how it's gonna work, because there's attorney-client privilege, so that's protected. So if they come across stuff that shows some other issues between, can they even prosecute on it because of attorney-client privilege? Because the search warrant is specifically for this Ukraine stuff.
I will have to defer to our legal experts. We will bring in either Rashad Ritchie, Charles Coleman Jr., Adrian Lawrence. I don't know, honestly. I imagine that there are limits to attorney-client privilege when crimes have been committed, I would assume. But
right.
In any event, it's so unfair. And the thing is, like, yet another of Trump's people is involved in shady stuff, or is at least being investigated for it. This is a pattern that has been fairly clear for some time. But I wanna show you, it's always fun when one of these right wingers gets like this close to learning and understanding something, but doesn't quite reach it. So here is a guy whose whole life is that, Jesse Waters.
Peters, dude, they just raided the guy's house. And you're not disturbed by the pattern that two Trump lawyers have their homes raided? The campaign manager has his home raided, another confidant has his home raided. You're not disturbed by that pattern? The fact that Democrat prosecutors are waging political warfare for the benefit of the Democratic Party just to purge Trump because he challenged the system? I mean, that should scare everybody.
Again, it's a weird motivation he's putting on them, but I can only speak for myself. Yes, I'm disturbed by the pattern that we see. I'm really disturbed by the fact that he surrounded himself by a bunch of criminals. Are you not disturbed by that part of it?
I'm fully disturbed in the fact that they continue to ignore these major red flags. It's like being in a bad relationship and like five, you know, it's like dating Bill Cosby. It's like, how many red flags do you need? Like, you know, maybe you should stay away from this guy.
Yeah.
That show on Fox, they always put one guy in there to be like, okay, you say the opposition and then we'll all jump on you. And then we'll jump on you.
Yeah.
And it's like, and we'll resolve it. But just jump on.
There's yet another woman saying that he cheated with her. Five women. Are you not disturbed by the pattern we're seeing?
Wait, I'm disturbed by all the lying, John. It's a witch hunt. That's what they're gonna say.
All of it. And you know what? It's unfair. It's not a legal thing. It's not a legal thing. It's not about whether crimes have been committed. It's about whether it's fair from our point of view. He's a patriot. So he gets to break the law if he wants to. And if you investigate him after doing that, that's unfair to me. The world's about fairness. Yeah. Donald Trump became president. The world ain't fair.
No, there's a lot we don't know about this, because the fact that they got the search warrant to me is huge. Because I really didn't think it was gonna happen. And I didn't think there was gonna be any consequences. I still kind of don't, so I'm on the same page as you. I don't think there'll be any consequences for Trump about the insurrection or possibly his tax issues in New York or whatever that issue was. But who knows? I mean, I've been surprised and I've been wrong. So I'm gonna keep an open mind about this, but it's good to see it happening. Maybe it's just for show, but. Yeah.
I'll cover it when the story pops up, but I'm not gonna invest myself deeply in it. Senator Joe Manchin, regardless of what he says, is effectively against virtually every one of the stated goals of the Biden administration. He wants the infrastructure bill to be much smaller than it's being proposed to be, even though in advance of the plan, he implied he wanted something twice as big. Now, any tax increase is unacceptable. But even more importantly, for the future of the Democratic Party, he is now effectively coming out against HR 1, the For the People Act. You know, that like little effort to stop some of the massive voter suppression that we had already been burdened by as a country, that now there's far more of in the wake of the last election. So it's backed by Biden, It aims to modernize voter registration, restore the Voting Rights Act, end gerrymandering, increase election security and campaign transparency, empower small donors, and implement various ethics reforms. So that's what it wants to do, to stop a lot of this suppression, especially racial motivated voter suppression. And this is what he has to say about that. How in the world could you, with the tension we have right now, allow a voting bill to restructure the voting of America on a partisan line? 20 to 25% of the public already doesn't trust the system, and that a party line overhaul would guarantee that number would increase, leading to more anarchy like that at the Capitol on January 6th. I just believe that all my heart and soul, that's what would happen, and I'm not going to be a part of it.
Gosh, man. So instead of blaming the insurrectionists and their radical conspiracy theories and their white supremacist ideology, he wants to blame the left. And what boils down to, like, a push for equality and a stronger democracy. I mean, he doesn't get it. I don't know why we would expect for him to get it. He's a white guy named Manchin, and he's a politician.
That's true. But he's a Joe. He's supposed to, like, understand what Joe Biden wants.
Joe Manchin. For me, it's so ironic that his name sounds like Manchin. We really didn't believe that he was going to step back from his own, you know, worldview perspective to really see what this could do for people. I mean, everybody is so afraid. I mean, you can't operate from fear when it comes to those terrorists coming through. I mean, these are people who tried to ruin our democracy. So we should even come full force with this sort of legislation to really try to make these changes, but to back down at this point. I mean, this guy's not even a moderate. This guy's really moving to the right hardcore. He's gonna have to change his party affiliation pretty soon.
Yeah, the statement is crazy. The only reasonable response to it is the meme, "I'm gonna become the Joker" as a response to you. Okay, so they lied about the election. They tried to steal the election. And because they lied about and tried to steal the election, we don't get to secure people's right to vote. You were attempting to be very fair, I think, by implying that there is a world in which what he said is an actual reflection of what he believes. I hope not, because again, like we've talked about this, I think maybe on Monday, you can't be that dumb. So you've gotta be lying. And then that may seem like I'm insulting him or I'm attacking him. No, I'm defending him, because he can't be that dumb. It's just not possible. I won't abide the thought. So it has to be a lie. That cannot be his actual reason for not wanting to do it. They lied.
I mean, I know he's lying, but I think he really doesn't think that there's a problem with voting rights.
Sure, he might not understand how racially motivated a lot of this is and all of that. But when he says 20 to 25% of the public doesn't trust the system, does he have no idea that if that's true, how that's true, why they don't trust the system, how they've been lied to by the people that he's protecting in the Senate, the Republicans? He's siding with those who lied. He works in the room that they broke into, that they stormed.
There's a lot of people that don't trust the system, and they're not all terrorist insurrectionists that were in the Capitol. There's a lot of people that don't trust the system for a lot of reasons, Joe Manchin. And we gotta look at all of those people, and they're your constituents too, I think. Maybe he's recognizing that the demographics of his, you know, of his constituents don't add up to protecting voting rights. Instead, he's leaning towards these, you know, Trumper philosophies. Maybe he thinks that that's his ticket for the next election. And that's sad. That's what our politics is all about. It's really, how am I going to win? How am I going to hold on to this power? Not how am I going to help the people?
Yeah. Yeah, and in this case, I think it's just his own very particular political power, because his path is definitely a path that leads to the Senate Republicans taking back over. But
I mean,
trusting the system.
Imagine living in a country that purports to be like the beacon of democracy, and then choosing to pander to racists, like insurrectionists, instead of strengthening the democracy and strengthening the country for the people. I mean, this is where we're at. We're the beacon, but we don't want to protect voting rights. We don't want to, you know, modernize our voting systems. We don't want to make sure that gerrymandering doesn't exist. I mean, these are things that we know happened, that were intentional, that are still happening. I know I just read that California might lose a seat because of the way these voting lines and the districts are being drawn. It's a big deal. I mean, this is stuff that has been laid into the framework of this country. So if you want to act like it hasn't happened, like, I'm with you. Is he lying or is he stupid? I believe he is lying, but I do believe that there's also something that he just doesn't want to believe it. Well, we're past all that. Slavery's over. That's the whole thing we keep hearing, right? Slavery's over. As if there's no residual effects from having some kind of horrible stuff like that and laws put in place to uphold stuff like that. So Joe Manchin is just such a disappointment. I don't understand how his political philosophy is shifting and where what he wants to go, other than just to hold on to power, but it's definitely not to help people.
Sure. And as you alluded to, there are different forms of not trusting the system. And not all of them are because you believe stop the steal and all the lies or whatever. Like, you know, if you had to wait in line for 10 hours to vote because they decided to take a bunch of the voting places out of your area because it was a little bit too black for them, then I could see why you might not trust the system totally. If you had been unable to turn, you know, the fact that in an area you might actually represent like the bulk of this is what the people want. You can't turn that into political representation because of racial gerrymandering. You might not trust the system. But I guess that's not the right kind of not trusting the system for Joe Manchin. Or maybe it's just that the ones he's worried about are the ones who attack the Capitol. So these terrorists scared him and now he's giving them what they want. I guess the pro-voting activists haven't been violent and wild and crazy enough for Joe Manchin to motivate him properly.
Right?
Anyway, way to set up the incentives, Manchin. Exactly. Exactly. And now it's time for news from around the world. And meanwhile, in. Meanwhile, in India, there was a social media campaign to put pressure on their leadership in response to a number of different failures around things like dealing with the coronavirus. Except it was difficult for it to really get off the ground because Facebook actually banned the hashtag calling for Narendra Modi to resign. They did that yesterday. People who tried to post the hashtag instead saw a message saying that Facebook was temporarily hiding the posts in order to keep the community safe. Notably not saying which community is that they're trying to keep safe from political consequences. Anyway, they later said after allowing it to be used that it was blocked by mistake. And they claim that it wasn't because the Indian government asked Facebook to remove it or anything like that. It also says the block was the result of some of the kind of content that was using it, but they didn't specify what kind of content, how common it was or anything like that. They just banned the whole thing. So they're saying it's not motivated by political pressure from the Indian government. I don't know, what do you think?
John, you know how I feel about censorship and I don't like it. And I know Twitter can do their own thing and they can do whatever they like, but this is the kind of stuff that you get mixed into. You know, I really, if we're using social media and Twitter as platforms to communicate, I want it to be as free as possible because I don't like that this kind of stuff happens. I think Twitter's lying, which they have before.
Case it's Facebook, but yes.
Oh, and Facebook, you know, Facebook really needs to regulate on the misinformation that's going on. That doesn't mean censorship. It just means I like the little alerts like, hey, here's more information if you want to click or this hasn't.
Context.
Yeah. And, you know, when you have a country that's in crisis like this, the mobilizing the people is really important. And they have, I think, have a right to call out their leaders and to say, you're failing us. You know, and if they can't mobilize together, then you're really, that's really holding a whole group of people down from trying to come together as a collective and, you know, change the system. I mean, they don't have a lot of power in India as it is. So it's concerning to me when I see this kind of stuff happening because it's a slippery slope. It's either like, you're either pro-life or you're pro-choice, you know, and if you're pro-choice, you can't have any contingencies. It has to just be this. So it's either gonna be free speech, and I use that loosely because I don't mean in the legal way, but you're either gonna be able to have a platform like Twitter where you can say what you like, as long as you're not like, I'm gonna murder people, I get that. You know, or you're not. Like, you can't have all of these super contingencies in what's allowed and the government controlling it. If the government doesn't want Twitter there, then the government can block Twitter. But I don't like when Twitter jumps in there and does things like that.
And I think that's really disillusioning, by the way.
Yeah. It is.
Well, and that's the thing. Like you've mentioned Twitter a few times. That's one of the things that makes people really nervous about this, because Facebook can say that there was no government pressure, and maybe that's true. Although I think that if you believe that Mark Zuckerberg and his company wouldn't lie to us, you're crazy. Right. But it was just less than a week ago that Twitter censored tweets critical of India's handling of the pandemic at its government's request. So an American social media company got requests from a government to protect its political leadership from debate, let alone actual consequences. And they did what they wanted. And so we're supposed to believe Facebook, they're saying it wasn't as a result of pressure. Are they saying there wasn't any pressure? Are they saying there was pressure, but that's not what caused us to do it? It was something else. It just happened to happen at the same time that Twitter was bound to the pressure. Why would we believe?
That's what we say in Spanish, conveniente. How convenient that you happen to have that. It happened to happen. It was just a flub.
Yeah.
We know what's going on. We know they're lying. There's a lot of money to be made. These politicians and these governments have a lot of money. And this is what's tricky. When we start relying on these private companies to allow us to communicate, then they have control over who and how and when we can communicate.
Yeah.
And we need to have a free way to communicate that's universal. And when the internet came to be, it was supposed to be like this free space, and it's supposed to be, it was really meant to create equality. And it's being subverted.
That's why I suggest everyone go on Mike Lindell's social media site.
Yes.
Anyway.
I'm already there.
Yeah. Are you? Meanwhile, Lynn. Meanwhile, I was really hoping you'd go with the title I put in. Anyway, meanwhile, in the melting glaciers worldwide, they're melting. And they're glaciers for now, but perhaps for not much longer. According to a new study, glaciers are melting faster, losing 31% more source than ice per year than they did just 15 years ago. This is according to three-dimensional satellite measurements of all of the world's mountain glaciers. So this is a new technique, and it's all encompassing. They're talking about measuring literally every glacier in the world to figure out not only what's being lost, but how it's accelerating over time. Scientists calculated the world's 220,000 mountain glaciers. Wow, there's more than I thought there were, having only stood on one. Are losing more than 328 billion tons of ice and snow per year since 2015, which is just an amazing amount. Half of all of that loss is coming from the US and Canada, with Alaska's melt rates being among the highest on the planet. There's one glacier, the Columbia Glacier, that's retreating about 115 feet every single year.
Wow.
But it's not just here. Almost all of the world's glaciers are melting, even ones in Tibet that used to be stable. Except for a few in Iceland and Scandinavia that are fed by increased precipitation, the melt rates are accelerating all around the world. So this is some scary stuff.
Yeah, it's been happening for a while. And I don't know if you know, it's part of the reason why I have a vegan diet. It's a big part in climate change. We have a lot of, I mean, we're working on emissions, we're working on all of these things, but it's not happening fast enough, John. We're gonna see the consequences of this in our lifetime. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's happening soon.
Yeah,
and you know, we're gonna see the waters where people are gonna have beachfront property that don't right now. That's gonna happen, and that's gonna be real. And this is a huge consequence of poor legislation and really pandering to big business and the oil industry at the end of the day. And now we have exported industrialized farming all over the globe. And it takes so much water to raise cattle, and they have a lot of farts, John.
And I've heard that actually. Yes.
It is true. It is true. And it's unbelievable that that could be the case, but it's because of the massive scale in which we're doing it. That's really making a real big problem. And there's all kinds of issues that are affected by that kind of stuff, by industrialized farming. You know, we've talked about the water, clean water, and all kinds of different things that happen. But we don't know the consequences of a lot of the stuff that we're doing too, like fracking and this. We just are in a really bad place, and no one's taking it seriously. Joe Biden talks about it. He's not taking it seriously. He's not going to see it in his lifetime, that's for sure. It's happening, but he's not.
More seriously than Trump, perhaps, but to the actual scale of the problem.
He says it exists, but that's not enough. You can't just say climate change exists. You have to actually do something about it. And we were supposed to do something about it 20, 40 years ago. And they did start, especially here in California, we had really high regulations for emissions and things like that. But the rest of the country did not follow, and the rest of the world hasn't followed. And because of treaties like NAFTA, we're allowing other countries to do what we won't even do. And we'll be, you know, benefiting from that. It's all the same planet, people. We have to really, you know, work on this together, which was the point of the Paris Agreement. So we'll see what happens now.
Yeah. Yeah, one thing I want to focus on though is that you know, hopefully we recommit to it, but we give credit to environmental activists and people who communicate about this, not only for making sure that people know that this is a serious issue, but also really evaluating realistically how likely even the biggest things we are doing are to help. So, you know, like people like Greta obviously want the US to rejoin the Paris Climate Accords, but they also acknowledge that those are not the be all end all of what we need to be doing. And as a reminder of that, in addition to this new information about how glacier melting is accelerating, you should also know that apparently a tenth of the world's mountain glacier ice will have melted by the middle of this century, even if humanity meets the goals of the Paris Climate Accord.
Yeah.
The loss is equivalent to more than 13,200 cubic kilometers of water, enough to fill Lake Superior or more than, and then because this is the Guardian, 10 million Wembley stadiums. That's if we do everything we say we're going to do.
No, we passed the point of no return already. We already passed the point of no return. It's already like, it's a crisis. It's too late. Yeah. We can try to put some band-aids on it to try to kind of hold it together. But those glaciers are going, it's too late. The emissions are too high. The ozone is too jacked. I mean, we're past that. Now, we don't know yet if we can repair it. You know, scientists are talking about it. They're not quite sure how long it would take to fully, you know, get the air back to where it needs to be, the climate. But we also don't know, you know, how many countries are gonna really do what they're saying. And even the Paris Accord, it's like, what is it, by like 2025 or 2028? It's like, we don't have this time. It needs to have happened
yesterday.
The Biden
stuff is even longer. The time horizon is
even irrelevant. Longer. Like, I'm glad, like, we're not going to sell any more, you know, gasoline powered cars in California, like, in 5 years. Mm-hmm. Everybody freaked out. Oh, Governor Newsom said we can't buy cars here that are gasoline based. Yeah, and like, by 2028, that doesn't do any, it's not going to do anything. It's sort of like, just a hope, and it's a political point to say that's it. And it's very sad, because if people have children, this is gonna greatly affect their children. I mean, we saw how these kinds of climate crises, when you start messing with the land, you start messing with the air. Look at the Great Depression. You know, look at you know, how we didn't properly care for our land, and it caused famine. It caused a lot of trouble. We're gonna see that. There's going to be another great famine. There's going to be a lot of people washed away. We're seeing it already, and it's very sad. Yeah,
that's true.
You know,
well, that is a bit of a down note, but I do want to end. We only have a couple more minutes, but I want to end on a bit of an up note. So, meanwhile, in Gibraltar, at least on a small scale, we're seeing what can happen when you actually vaccinate your population and appear to care about what happens with the pandemic. So, bearing in mind that Gibraltar is an area with just 34,000 inhabitants, they've fully vaccinated, as of yesterday, according to the Wall Street Journal, about 85% of adults. Its government says 98% of adults over 60. The authorities had administered over 32,000 second doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine as of Tuesday, which includes some residents of Spain who work in Gibraltar. So that's the official government numbers. Some are saying that with the additional outside workers who come in, they're actually technically at 106% vaccination. I don't know exactly which it is, but I know that it's very high. And understand that Gibraltar, while small, did have a serious problem with the pandemic earlier on. They went from just 60 active infections back in mid-December to more than 1,200 just 3 weeks later. That is in a very small area. They had 1,200 infections. Hospitalizations and deaths soon followed. During the whole of 2020, they lost only 7 people to COVID. The score for January alone was 71, a measurable percentage of their small population. Now, that said, because they've been so successful and they have inoculated at least 85, if not virtually everyone, every percent there, there have been no active cases among the residents for 3 weeks. The COVID ward of St. Bernard's Hospital has seen just 2 hospitalizations and 0 deaths since the middle of March. And so they vaccinated. and the deaths are gone, the hospitalizations are gone, they're not seeing new infections. That is the most common sense, reasonable thing imaginable if you actually vaccinate people.
No new infections. Can you believe it? That is amazing. And we are seeing that same result here in the United States. We're seeing the cases go down. We're seeing a drop in infections, a drop in hospitalizations all over the place because people are getting vaccinated. I don't know when this whole vaccine thing really went off the deep end. I know there was a lot of, you know, conspiracy and stuff tied to autism, et cetera, but we use vaccines and we have for many, many years. I mean, your children go to public school, they get inoculated. It's just part of how we live as a society because there's so many of us. So I'm really glad to see that they are having such success, and I'm really hopeful for our country as well.
I agree. Yeah.
We're better off than most nations, and we need to take advantage of that.
Yeah, we at least have it. We can do it. There's multiple states where you just walk in right now. The question is, will we actually do it? I don't know that we'll ever reach 85% or 90%, but we could, and we would benefit just like Gibraltar does.
We sure would.
Now that said, unfortunately, that's all the time we have. We are right up against the limit, but Viviana, as always, it is a pleasure to have you on the show. Until next time, where can people see more of your work?
Thank you, John. You guys can follow me on Twitter. You can follow me on Instagram and check out my show, Contextualize This, on Facebook and also on YouTube. And I hope to hear from you guys. John, it is always a pleasure. I appreciate you and your team. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you. Hope to talk to you soon. After close to a year-long hold, America is back to having mass shootings far too regularly. And we now have President Biden, who has talked about doing something about this, some form of gun control in a country that seems to want something to finally be done. There hasn't been much yet though. So let's talk about what Joe Biden has done and what might be coming in the near future, hopefully. And we're very lucky to be joined in the program to talk about this topic and more. Once again, by the director of the Department of Medicine, Health and Society at Vanderbilt University, as well as a professor of sociology and psychiatry there, and the author of Dying of Whiteness, Jonathan Metzl. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Thanks so much, great to be back.
Glad to have you here. So a couple different things that we want to talk about. The first is what Biden has done so far. And so he has signed an executive order having to do with guns, focused mainly, it seems like, on research and future stuff that might be done. What do you think about that executive order?
We have 40,000 gun deaths a year in this country. I think anything is going to be an improvement. I think Biden made some important first steps. Some were about addressing the trafficking of guns, and so ghost guns, guns you can make yourself, 3D guns, you name it, those kind of guns. We don't want any of those guns because they're not traceable. So that was important. I certainly think more money for gun violence prevention in communities is an important step. None of this is going to change the gun problem we have in this country. It's an important step and it's an important signal. But I don't think in and of itself it's going to make a difference if it's not accompanied by a bunch of other stuff.
I certainly agree, but what we have right now is some research, and that's something that you've written about in the past about what the future of gun-focused research should actually look like. I don't necessarily know exactly what form it will come in, but based on your research, what are some suggestions you would have for what they should do as they're increasing the amount of research in the future?
Well, I think one of the issues, of course, is that there's been this divide almost between the gun research we do about, like, mass shootings, for example, that happen in high profile places, and just the everyday drone of gun related injury and death that happens in communities of color. And so what we had before was mass shootings are when it makes the news, but if it happens in South Chicago, we call it gang violence or, you know, urban crime, something like that. And so part of the work I've been doing recently, we just put out an article last week about this, is to say, let's look at all multiple victim shootings the same in terms of thinking about what might stop them. And let's think about really the broad spectrum of gun crime and gun death. Of course, we also have an issue about the more guns, the more suicides. 2/3 of gun death in this country are suicide. And so also look a bit more closely at suicide. And for me, it's also that, you know, we just need broader coalitions looking at this. I mean, the question of gun rights isn't just about gun control versus gun rights. It's a broader issue. It ties into social justice. It ties into police reform. police are going to be much more likely to draw their weapons if they feel like they're going into a place where there are weapons, for example. Police and victims get shot more where there are guns and stuff. So a lot of these things are happening at the same time. And the research we've been doing recently, and we just had a paper come out in Social Science and Medicine, said, let's broaden our idea about what we're looking at here to come up with some broader solutions.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that there's been seemingly for a long time, there's been this real, I mean, maybe hesitance doesn't go nearly far enough to have the government be involved in research into this, even insofar as like really getting into why it's happening. And I can sort of understand why some parties would not want there to be a great deal of research into that. What I find interesting is that you and your co-authors in the paper that we referenced earlier, you say that current gun owners, people who sell guns, those who might consider themselves to be on the opposite side in a lot of ways of this issue, you believe that they should actually be brought in. What are some potential areas where you feel like there could be some common ground with those people who might have pretty hardened views of what gun control might look like, what it might accomplish, and they might be pretty opposed to it?
Yeah, I think there are two important avenues here. One, of course, is what do guns mean to people? I think that a lot of times researchers swoop in and they say, we need background checks or we need, you know, whatever. They're looking at guns that are fired. They're looking at guns in the instances where there's this horrible thing happened, and that makes sense, right? The public health model is like, here's a vector, let's stop the vector and keep people safe. But we have, you know, millions of guns in this country, over one gun per person. And so most guns are never fired. And so part of the issue that we argue is, let's have conversations about guns at times when they're not being fired. Let's talk to gun owners and figure out what guns mean in people's daily lives. So that's certainly part of it. Another really big part of it is, what are the vectors that divide people about this? I mean, it's important to remember, nobody wants gun death. Nobody wants gun crime. Nobody wants gun suicide. But there are massive industries that go into dividing people, to make people think that they have nothing in common with each other. And so it's also, how can you disrupt this? I mean, for me, as somebody who studied this for a long time, even this pro-gun, anti-gun, the whole divide is like it just, you know, it's so counterproductive, but there are people driving that narrative and making money off of it. And one example, for example, is mass shootings, right? Mass shootings are horrible, they're horrific, nobody wants them. And they're also great for business because they're great gun selling opportunities, because then the minute it happens, somebody's out there saying, well, somebody's going to take away your guns, and everybody rushes out and buys a gun. So disrupting that narrative, to me, is super important. It's not just about the shooting itself. It's also about, you know, how can we address this as a site of disinformation and find some common cause?
Yeah, there is a very clear profit motive, and the calls to action to purchase a product it's just about the clearest that we see in American politics. Virtually anything that happens that has to do with guns is a reason to go out and buy more guns and ammunition. That is certainly the case. So we've talked about Biden's executive order. You've implied that obviously there needs to be more done. Is there anything that you've seen coming out of the Biden administration, perhaps his remarks to Congress last night, that imply to you that something is actually going to happen? I know that he's talked about universal background checks, sort of that first floor of potential reform. Do you think that that's likely to happen soon?
I had a hard time hearing that last night. I mean, certainly we're in such a horrible moment, right? We've of course lost 600,000 people to a pandemic, and then as we start to go back in public, then there are more mass shootings, and we had over 40,000 gun deaths a year last year, and we set all records for gun sales. And so this is a massive problem, and one that's going to snowball. I mean, 10 years from now, people will be suffering the effects of what's been happening now. And so I support his call. I know his heart is in the right place. And I think that, you know, he was imploring Congress. He was saying, I'm going to do something. And the suggestions that he was saying, like background checks, they're certainly important as beginner. It's kind of like the salt on the meal or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the unfortunate issue here is that most gun policy is set by the judiciary in this country. It's not really a result of Congress. I mean, it is to a sense, but really it's really judges set a lot of gun policy, particularly the Supreme Court. And there's a case pending now before the Supreme Court that threatens to overturn pretty much the, you know, the modern gun control movement as we know it. And so there's a lot happening in this space going in both directions.
Well, yeah. Well, that obviously very important. So tell me a little bit about that case and why you think it has the potential to be so big.
Yeah. Well, at its core, New York City has had a law on the books since 1913. That's worked out pretty well, which is basically that people can get a gun license, they can do target practice, stuff like that. But you can't just carry a gun in public, conceal a weapon in public and go on the subway or to Madison Square Garden or to Central Park, because New York has basically balanced gun rights on one hand and public safety in dense urban areas on the other. And overall, it's been a pretty effective law if you look at the rates of gun injury and death in New York compared to other similar, you know, urban areas. And mm-hmm. and so part of the issue is there are two guys. This is, of course, they're being, you know, the heads of something, you know, used by something. But there are two guys who said, well, we have, you know, they have the right to go take target practice and take their guns back and forth, but they wanted to carry their guns in public because they needed them for self-defense, quote unquote. And this was appealed. It went all the way up. The Supreme Court for decades has not heard cases like this challenge, right? There have been one from Maryland, from other places. Basically, the idea is city and state's rights. Cities have a right to set gun policies that work best for them. But this Supreme Court, the one that now has three A-plus rated justices from Trump who are NRA rated justices, they decided to hear a case that had already been determined earlier on to be not relevant and moot. They're going to hear this case, and an issue is, does the city of New York have a right to set gun policies for guns in public spaces, or does the Second Amendment create this sacrosanct thing where really it's almost like for some people, the First Amendment, that just like free speech is true everywhere in the country, so should the Second Amendment be true and they should be able to carry guns. And mm-hmm. it's a potential disaster because it has implications not just for New York, but for other cities like Los Angeles, San Francisco, et cetera, that have set gun policies and elected leaders who set those gun policies. Those policies are now at risk.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sort of, I think, gathering from what you said that you believe that now the Supreme Court is, I don't even know if conservative is the right word, but pro-gun enough that they might not only take this up, which they're going to, but decide that these regulations are not acceptable. And depending on how it's written, how broad the decision is, it could, in theory, invalidate virtually any restriction on people's ability to possess guns of whatever type, concealed, open. This is potentially, we don't know exactly how far they might end up going, right?
Right. I mean, they've signaled a narrowness, but I think it's a cause for alarm because, again, so many gun policy. I mean, basically what we've seen in this country is there was a 2008 decision called the Heller decision that basically said people can have guns in their homes, but locales can make up their own mind. Mm-hmm. Because shockingly, rural Montana and crowded D train subway in New York are two different settings, believe it or not. and so maybe safety is not the same issue in those two issues. And so I think that's the issue. And so the Supreme Court kind of left this up to locales. And in that space emerged the modern gun control movement, basically this idea that we respect the Second Amendment, but it should vary. And so, you know, a state like Virginia, for example, elected a governor who has a particular issue and, you know, things like that. Like we have a patchwork, right? And what we see is places that are very, very open about guns. Well, there's a lot of liberty if you care about carrying guns. And there's also much more gun-related injury and death pretty much across the board. And so, you know, what we're doing is we're taking potentially the stuff from the places that have not, that have more gun death. We're going to nationalize those policies. It's really alarming.
It certainly is. And so while in the near future, obviously we have to see what Joe Biden and Congress are going to do in this area. We should also keep a bit of attention on the Supreme Court as well, because that wasn't a case that was actually on my radar, but now I'm incredibly worried about it. So as always, Jonathan, thank you for terrifying me, but we do appreciate both your research and you joining us on the show. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.